Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In The Now podcast channel. Joining me for the conversation on this Monday, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. Shane, nice to be with you today to begin a new week. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time with our listeners and clients.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Dan. Hope you had a great weekend.
So, Shane, to begin, have to, of course, acknowledge how over the past few weeks, several U.S. southern states have been severely impacted by a string of hurricanes. These states, of course, still dealing with the effects and aftermath of these storms. So I'm curious, how has the federal government been coordinating with state and local officials on the provision of relief and recovery efforts?
That's right. Yeah, keep in mind, there was a 1-2 punch. It was two hurricanes, Hurricane Helene, and then the one from a week ago, Hurricane Milton. So you're right. You know, it is a multi-pronged recovery, right? The federal government, the state government, local government, and then importantly, too, you know, you have a lot of charitable organizations involved as well. You know, the hurricane of last week, Hurricane Milton, was, you know, the stronger, probably wider punch, if you will, where you saw, you know, over 3 million people lose their power. That has been cut in half, so it's down to about 1.5 million still in need of power. There are hundreds of FEMA officials and personnel on the ground providing search and rescue, shelter support, and other essential supplies. You've seen, you know, President Biden has had regular calls with local officials. Vice President Harris has visited Georgia and North Carolina. So you're getting officials on the ground to assess the damage. And, you know, part of this is important because they need to see the devastation, and you know that has prompted President Biden to approve make a disaster declaration for Florida for I think 34 counties that will get them extra resources. So some of that is important. Some of it is also posturing. You know, keep in mind President Bush's reaction to Hurricane Katrina. About 15 years ago, plus, was, you know, viewed as lackluster and, you know, really hurt his numbers and standing with the public and, you know, remains kind of a black eye on his presidency. So I think, you know, officials need to be out in front to show that they are working, even though they may already be putting resources behind the event. You know, visibility is important here. And I think you're going to see continued efforts, whether it be FEMA delivering more meals. They've already delivered over 1.5 million meals, or, you know, building upon the almost 500,000 liters of water they've provided to those impacted. But, you know, at the same time, you have the Coast Guard and others still making sure that people are rescued because, you know, there's still flooding waters. So some people have been cut off. And so the rescues have been made. And, you know, I think those operations will continue. You know, the total impact on these hurricanes is not going to be in the billions. It's going to be in the tens of billions, if not reaching $100 billion. So, you know, the recovery will go on not for weeks, but months, especially as, you know, insurance companies will be assessing damage and paying out claims in the future weeks and months. So, you know, this is not a short-lived event. Unfortunately, it will take months for the impacted areas to fully recover.
Well, Shane, thank you for that recap. It is, of course, encouraging to hear that relief and recovery on a local, state, and federal level, all in full force. And our thoughts, of course, remain with those who have been impacted across these states. If we turn overseas, I do want to follow up on tensions in the Middle East, which we have been covering here on the podcast. Now, since we last spoke, these tensions, unfortunately, have been increasing with growing fears of a widening conflict across the region. I understand that President Biden recently held a direct phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Any takeaways from that call, and how might this all evolve from here?
Yeah, that's right. This is, I think, the first one-on-one conversation that President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu had in over a month and a half. So, you know, it was positive for them to connect. However, you know, there's still some disagreement about the path ahead. You know, President Biden is frustrated that Prime Minister Netanyahu has not shared with him their plans for retaliation against Iran. You know, Iran tried to strike with almost 200 ballistic missiles. And, you know, it is widely anticipated that Israel's retaliation is imminent. You know, the question is, you know, will it be today or will it be in a few days? And then secondly is what that retaliation will consist of. And, you know, I think Israel is still figuring out exactly how and when they're going to strike. But at the same time, you mentioned widening of the conflict there, and you're seeing Israel going into southern Lebanon and attacking Hezbollah, a terrorist organization that is backed by Iran. And, you know, I think one a bright spot for easing tensions out of this call was that it appears that Israel is hitting pause on attacks in Beirut, which is Lebanon's capital, as there may be some constructive dialogue going on behind the scenes. So, you know, as we've talked about, this conflict, you know, continues, and we didn't even talk about what Israel is doing in Gaza. I think Israel is still continuing to dismantle the tunnel network in Gaza, and they hope to conclude that work in the coming months. But, you know, things are fluid on the ground in the Middle East. And I think, you know, we should not expect any immediate resolution to the wider conflicts at hand. And, you know, there are signs of optimism, but, you know, all of this, as we've seen, could turn on a dime, especially with Iran, you know, using Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis as their proxies.
Well, thank you, Shane, for keeping our listeners and clients current on the situation within the Middle East, and we'll, of course, continue our coverage on this all. Now, before we close out, if we come back stateside, Election Day, it is hard to believe, just a few weeks away at this point. So as we're getting down to the wire, what is polling pointing to across some of these key swing states, and how are the candidates making use of the final weeks and days of the campaign?
Yeah, I think as we expected, this race continues to tighten on the presidential level. You know, back in early June, I would have told you President Trump is ahead and likely to win. You know, a month ago, I would have said Vice President Harris is ahead and likely to win. You know, today, it's a jump ball. You know, former President Trump has been coming on strong in the past few days. His poll numbers have been improving. You know, I think maybe that honeymoon period for Harris is starting to, you know, end. And, you know, even as the economy seems to be on more solid footing, which would benefit Vice President Harris, you're seeing record numbers of party registrations for Republicans. And it's my understanding that you haven't seen this kind of makeup where Republicans have a strong party registration coming into the final days of the election, where this hasn't happened in almost 40 years. So Republicans look very strong. However, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to probably be about voter turnout. And I think Democrats are very, very narrowly focusing on issues and targeting voters to get them out to vote on issues like reproductive rights. And so this is going to remain close until everything is said and done. I would also note that, you know, at the same time, Republicans are having a tough time with some of their Senate candidates. Well, I still think Republicans are likely to win the Senate. I don't think it's going to be picking up as many seats as many Republicans have hoped. And, you know, while they are excited about their candidates in some of these swing states, I think, you know, the gap between former President Trump and some of these Republican Senate candidates is just enough that Democrats may be able to prevent a tidal wave in the Senate, even though I think Republicans are still in the driver's seat there. So it's to your point, you know, we're in the final stretch and it's going to be a sprint to the finish. You're seeing the candidates, their vice presidential candidates and their surrogates storm the battleground states. You know, I was intrigued by former President Trump traveling to an event in California. He's not going to win California. And I think some Republicans are concerned that, you know, he's going on a little bit of a wild goose chase. But, you know, there is often strategy behind where they go, to your point. And you're seeing the candidates spend most of their time in the swing states, you know, including North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia. And I think that will be the case for the remaining 3 weeks.
Well, thank you, Shane, for the update as to what the polls are pointing to, and we'll continue our coverage over the next few weeks as we're quickly approaching Election Day. Though, Shane, thank you once again for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients, keeping them informed on a range of topics, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
I look forward to it, Dan, and I hope you have a great week, and we'll catch up soon.
Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. Before we close out, I do want to remind our listeners and our clients of UBS, you can now locate the latest Washington Weekly publication on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.